Welcome to Journeys Fire, a weekly program for the visionary and the passionate soul on a mission. I'm Richard Brendan, professional speaker, life purpose coach, counselor, and former hospice chaplain. My purpose in life is to inspire the fire that burns within you and reawaken your heart for love, life, and work. Each week, I'll be bringing you engaging conversations with today's visionary leaders and social change artists. I believe that true fulfillment begins when we say yes to our dreams and take bold and inspired action to design the lives we are created for. Are you ready to live your best life? Well, Journey's Fire begins now. Welcome to the program. I'm excited to have Diana J. Ensign joining me today on the program. This is her third visit. Her first two visits were on previous books that she's done, and she has a new book coming out called The Freedom to Be, Stories from Transgender Youth, Adults, and Their Families. And I'm just going to take this from the back of her book. Award-winning author Diana J. Ensign practices the art of listening to people who teach us how to love and care for one another on this human journey. In this book, here, transgender, non-binary, and gender non-conforming teens, adults, and family members voice an urgent call for freedom. The freedom to pursue dreams, to work in meaningful jobs, to be free of hatred and violence, to love one another, and to be who they are. This book underscores the essential human need for safety, connection, acceptance, and for policies that ensure every family is valued. With these candid and insightful narratives, we learn practical ways that parents, educators, healthcare providers, neighbors, friends, and allies can create supportive communities for transgender individuals. This book, to me, is very important because I think this is an area that is so misunderstood in our country. And I'm also excited that Addison J. Smith is joining us. Addison is currently the music collection coordinator at Ball State University Library and one of those documented in this book. Addison is transgender. So it's been a joy that both of them are here with us today. Diana and Addison, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Addison, it's a joy to meet you, and I know you drove all the way down from Muncie, Indiana, so I'm impressed. So thank you for sharing that time. And Diana, this is your third time on. This is your third book.
It is.
Yeah. I want to start off, first of all, because one thing I noticed, Diana, in your book, and you even had it under your name in the introduction, and then everyone who was profiled in the book, Addison being one of them, had various pronouns under their name. And so what I wanted to find out is, tell me about the significance of the pronouns that we want to use and ask why that matters when it comes to transgender.
Mm-hmm. I can answer that in terms of the book, and maybe Addison can answer that a little more technical. But for the book, when I spoke to people, almost everyone universally said one thing that everyone can do that would be helpful for transgender, non-binary individuals and or gender non-conforming individuals is to get the pronouns right and get the names right, because that's affirming and it's respectful. And when I set up the book, The Freedom to Be, if you're glancing through it, you'll see I have people's names because that's how we introduce ourselves. You know, when someone says, hey, how you doing? You say, oh, I'm Diana, right? And then, well, what do you do? Oh, well, I'm a writer. And so I did the same thing for everyone in the book. What's your name? You know, what do you do? You know, you're a student, you're a performer, you're an advocate, you know, wherever it is that you work or what your interests are. And then after that are the pronouns, you know, he, him, his, or they, their, or she, her, because people that I talked to said that's really important. And if we all do that, if everyone does that, you know, then we're just being respectful and we're not making assumptions.
Yeah. Addison?
Yeah, basically that is correct. I mean, in most organized queer spaces, the sharing of pronouns is one of the first things we do. It's like we go around, at a Indie Pride board meeting or a Gender Nexus board meeting, especially if we have guests, we'll go around and everybody introduce themselves and it gets to me. Hi, I'm Maddie Smith. They, them, there. Mm-hmm. I'm a board member and director of education, and then next person. We do things along those lines, basically just to let people know who we are, what our proper pronouns are. And as a non-binary person, I do prefer they, them, their. But I will take she's because I'm a transfeminine non-binary person, and I look much more feminine now than I used to. So I often tell people, prefer they, take she, never he.
Okay.
And if you're calling me a he, you're being quite disrespectful, especially, you know, given the way I present.
Do most people even know to ask this question?
No.
Yeah.
It's really common in queer spaces, mm-hmm. LGBTQ spaces, mm-hmm. But in terms of, like, general population, no.
Yeah.
Most people don't know.
Yeah. Diana, your first book was mm-hmm. Traveling Spirit, your second, Heart Guide. Why this topic, and why now?
Well, the books I write tend to reflect sort of what's going on with me or with the world around me. And so this topic obviously reflects things going on in society and in our environment right now. A friend had suggested the topic to me, and I thought, oh, that's interesting, maybe. Mm-hmm. I had dealt with this topic about 20 years ago, and I have a lot of friends who helped educate me and helped me be informed. And then my daughter went to Thailand, and she worked for an LGBTQ nonprofit working on HIV education, and she said, oh, you definitely should do this. And I was like, well, we'll see. You know, the creative process, it just sort of reveals itself. And then I was on Facebook, and I saw this very hateful meme, and it was posted by someone I knew in Evansville, and it was against the transgender community. And I thought, oh, okay, this is like the third thing in a row that's coming at me that's saying I need to do something. And then in May, there was another event that happened that was sort of like, if you have any doubt, put it aside now. This is what you are doing. And I'm not going to go into detail because of people's privacies, mm-hmm. but I want to emphasize that if people are struggling just to make it through the day, you know, especially young people in school, you know, you have all these academic challenges, you have peer pressure, or people in college, you know, you've got enough struggles, enough things on your plate. The last thing you need is society or the culture or your classmates or your teachers putting hate or bullying or violence in your life. And parents aren't necessarily going to step forward and say, hey, my kid had two suicide attempts. And kids themselves may not step forward and say, hey, I was assaulted today outside the bathroom. But it's happening, and it's happening in our communities.
You wrote in the introduction that you were also deeply moved years ago when you saw the play at the Phoenix Theater here in Indianapolis, mm-hmm. The Laramie Project about Matthew Shepard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I saw that play at the Phoenix Theater, I just moved to Indiana. And Indiana, from my perspective, coming from someone who lived in Ann Arbor and outside Detroit, it took me a while to find a community here of friends and people that I felt comfortable with. And when I saw that play, I just started crying in the theater. I think that's the only play to date where I actually started sobbing. It just hit me so hard in the heart space.
Yeah. Yeah, which reminded me of a quote that you used in the introduction, one of my favorite Desmond Tutu quotes. He said, differences are not intended to separate, to alienate. We are different precisely in order to realize our need of one another. Now, as a writer, Diana, you broke this down, which I enjoy, three different sections primarily, awesome young adults, strong family allies, and adult freedom fighters in terms of profiling. How did you come up with that idea?
Well, as I said earlier, for me, the creative process unfolds. I don't go in with like a here's how it's going to be. It just unfolds. And when I met these young people, they were awesome, incredible young people. And mm-hmm. when I met the adults, I was struck by the advocacy work and the courage and the bravery and the things they are doing in their communities, and they are freedom fighters. And so that title was just a natural fit because that's who these people are.
Yeah, yeah. I have some general questions I thought would be helpful for our listeners, those who are really unfamiliar with this whole area, because I have to say, as a as a sacred activist almost my whole life and devoted to the fact that we all ought to be treating each other with reverence and respect, regardless of lifestyle, color of skin, culture, what have you, I learned a lot of new things myself in here because we don't talk about this much amongst ourselves or even at churches. I would even say even progressive churches, the topic doesn't necessarily come up. So some of the questions I want to ask, and Addison, I'll address this to you. What does transgender mean?
Well, the textbook definition of transgender is anyone whose experience gender or gender expression does not match the gender they were assigned at birth. And a lot of people, you know, they don't understand that last part. What do you mean gender assigned at birth? What science has shown us is that the brain and the body don't necessarily work together. They don't develop together. And sometimes you end up with someone whose brain isn't wired the same way their body is built. And so they experience the world as the gender that their brain is and not what their body is. Mm-hmm. And that causes a lot of a friction. And you got to understand that a lot of the friction isn't just internal, it's external. It's because when you're growing up, and your brain's saying, I'm a girl, mm-hmm. but you're built as a boy. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to force you to be a boy. You know, there's a lot of language that's built around, you know, this is how boys act. This is how men act. And no, don't do that. I was literally told once, don't stand like that. Because I had one foot propped behind the other. Women stand like that. Men don't stand like that. Stand like a man. And I was like 13. I was a kid. And then if you do act the way that you experience the world, if you act as a non-binary person like myself and mm-hmm. kind of mixing up the masculine and the feminine together, then that's when people start calling names or assaulting you or using you as fodder in politics or religion and just saying, hey, you know, you're not supposed to be like that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And being transgender is the only way I know how to be because that is the way, that's who I am. That's what I am. I can't get away from it. And it took me many, many years. I didn't even figure myself out until I was in my early 40s.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have the language yet. I had never heard of the word genderqueer, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is a non-binary identity. Mm-hmm. And an ex-girlfriend who I was a really good friend with still, she started dating somebody who identified genderqueer. I was like, well, what's this? And looked it up and I'm reading and I'm like, oh, that's me. And after that, I call that the first layer of onion of denial. Mm-hmm. And after that, mm-hmm. the rest of the layers came apart and now I'm in a more feminine body and quite happier
and
now.
You don't look like you're in your 40s either, by the way. you mentioned
I am 50 this year, actually.
Congratulations. you mentioned genderqueer. I wanted to ask you, mm-hmm. how do people realize there, or can you talk about maybe the definitions of transgender, nonconformity, genderqueer, non-binary, those terms, because those come up in the book as well.
Well, the terms are actually quite fluid. Mm-hmm. Transgender is technically a umbrella term that includes trans men, trans women, and the non-binary identities. There are some non-binary people who don't like being called transgender because mm-hmm. They don't always, they don't feel that they need surgery or to go on hormones. They just want to be able to dress and express themselves as themselves without being picked on, basically.
Yeah.
But there are those of us like myself, a trans feminine. I call myself trans feminine, not a trans woman, because I'm still non-binary. Mm-hmm. I had some physical issues with my body before, and now I'm a little, feel much better.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I've lost my train of thought. Transgender is, like I said, umbrella term. Many a times it's applied mainly to people who do go on hormones or seek surgery.
Yes.
Non-binary, I think the easiest way to explain this is, like, you know, some people who are male and they're a man. Mm-hmm. They mm-hmm. identify as a man. They want to show the world that they are a man.
Right.
And you have some women. I am a woman. I want to show the world I'm a woman. Mm-hmm. And then you got some people who are like, yeah, I'm a man. And so. And then you have some women who are not mm-hmm. coming. Like, it's like, yeah, I'm a woman. And.
Yeah.
And then you got people like me
yeah.
who neither of those terms really resonate with me. I do not experience the world as a man or a woman. I experience it as something in the middle. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. one of the mm-hmm. things that we're learning through science, through, you know, brain mapping and genetics and you know, all these different studies, is that the body and the brain aren't this these two diametrically opposed sexes. Mm-hmm. We all fall on a continuum, and I happen to fall toward the middle, a little bit toward femme. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the non-binary area. The people who, you know, being a man doesn't feel right. Being a woman doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. Being here in the middle feels right.
Okay. What are some of the misconceptions that you have run into yourself?
Actually, it's a misconception that I had, that all trans women or trans feminine people are just gay men. Mm. I knew that I preferred women, not just as partners, but as friends for most of my mm-hmm. life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, there's no way I could be trans because, you know, that's just a really gay man.
Yeah.
And I was totally wrong about that. And once I figured, like, I started reading more and understanding what it is to be trans and the fact that gender identity and sexual orientation have absolutely nothing to do with each other.
Yes.
I was able to figure out that, you know, then, well, that right there, that's the one of the main misconceptions, is that gender identity and sexual orientation are the same thing. They're not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Other misconceptions. I once heard someone say that no one's transgender till they have the surgery.
Mm.
That's not true. Being transgender is about your brain, not your body.
Mm-hmm.
Mental illness. We are told often that we're just mentally ill, that we're delusional, and it doesn't matter that the APA, both APAs, the AMA and the WHO have all done research, and they've all come to the conclusion that being trans is not a delusion. It is not any sort of mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
People still want to tell us that we're mentally ill,
mm-hmm.
and they come up with all these really bizarre, like, facts. They call them facts, and you're like reading them, and you're thinking, where did you get this?
Right.
Right. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's those things tragically that caused the murder of Matthew Shepard, too,
mm-hmm.
as someone who was gay. Diana's a writer. when you got into this topic and started having conversation with so many different people, what were some of the things that perhaps you learned for the first time? And you're an activist yourself. I mean, pretty knowledgeable mm-hmm. about what's going on out there. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, well, I'm of the generation. I didn't grow up with a lot of these terms myself. As Addie said, you know, when I came of age in the 70s and 80s, and some of these terms, either they didn't exist, or if they existed, I wasn't familiar with them. Mm-hmm. They weren't in the common usage. So I think the language and learning about the struggles that the young people are facing in their schools, or just going to the doctor and having the staff or the doctor call them the wrong name, wrong gender, learning about the struggles they have just across the board in every area was...
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Do non-discrimination laws cover transgender people?
Well, that's up for debate right now in the Supreme
Addie
Court.
No, most of them don't.
They don't?
No.
But should.
But it's perfectly legal for someone to fire you for being trans, to kick you out of an apartment if they find out you're trans. To refuse to even interview you. You walk in, you're mm-hmm. like, oh, look, you're trans, get out.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, all that's perfectly legal in this state.
Mm-hmm.
There are some states that have put in, you know, accommodation non-discrimination laws, employment non-discrimination, housing non-discrimination, education There are a lot of places that there's no protections for trans kids in schools. It's starting to change. It's slowly changing, mainly through court action. But hopefully in the future, you know, the Equality Act is something that the House has passed at the federal level. Mitch McConnell is sitting on it.
Did that include transgender?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
It adds sexual orientation and gender identity to all of the federal non-discrimination statutes.
But McConnell is sitting on that, isn't he?
Yep.
Yeah.
Put it on a shelf and not going to let it go through.
Yeah, which is why our vote matters, and we have a big election coming up.
Indeed it does.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. In doing some research, and I remember when this came out, but 2014, June, Time Magazine, on their cover, it said, "The Transgender Tipping Point, America's Next Civil Rights Frontier." It strikes me it's probably still America's next civil rights frontier.
Yeah,
because so much more needs to be done. Although, has it helped people like you who are non-celebrities, having so many celebrities kind of come out or allow themselves to be identified as transgender?
It does. Representation and visibility always matter. Mm-hmm. That's why there's a lot more acceptance for gay people in this country, is because a lot of, you know, gay celebrities came out and said, yes, I'm gay. Time to deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, just over 20 years ago, it was Ellen DeGeneres basically lost her television show because she came out.
That's right.
And now she's one of the most celebrated talk show hosts around.
And we had Mayor Pete Buttigieg run for president.
Exactly.
Who was gay. Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
And we're hoping, I mean, there are transgender politicians right here in this state who have been elected. And we're hoping that, you know, as more people come to understand that we're just people. And that's one of the things that really bothers me, is all the rhetoric that we're subhuman, just because we're different.
Yes.
Is one of the things that I see slowly changing, and I think it changes more the more people get to see us as who we are.
I also read that there's a higher rate of suicide, attempted suicide, in transgender compared to the general population.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's it's kind of a form of minority stress syndrome, because people, you know, when you're a very young kid and you start coming out as who you are, you start acting as who you are. And even though I didn't know how to call myself non-binary when I was a teenager, I acted like a non-binary person because that's what I am. And I got bullied a lot for it.
Yeah.
And there were times I had some suicidal ideation. I got over it, thankfully, got through it, I should say, not really over it, with the help of friends and family who stayed close to me. But, when we have a lot of people who, you know, when your teachers are calling you names and refusing to talk to you as you would prefer to be talked to, when you have most of your classmates, are saying things about you, and you lose friends, especially at a very young, like in the teenage years, when suddenly all your friends stop being your friend.
Yes.
It just causes despondency. And that's the source. A lot of people want to say it's because you're trans. Trans people are suicidal. No, that is not true. Trans people become suicidal because of the way society treats them.
Diana, how did you get to know Addison, Addie?
Jenny.
I think it was Jenny White, who the founding director of Trinity Haven, a service and housing provider for LGBTQ youth at risk of homelessness.
And also, by the way, an amazing actor in our community, too. I love watching her perform. Did she help initially with a lot of the contacts that you came up with in this book?
Yeah, some people I knew, and then I put the word out to Jenny, and she got in communication with IYG and Gender Nexus and some of the other local organizations, just said, hey, if you're interested, you know, contact Diana. And then people contacted me.
Yeah, yeah. And Addie, I wanted to get back to you because you were raised in West Virginia. I mean, I'm not typecasting at all. I go rafting in West Virginia,
no,
but it strikes me it could even be more conservative than Indiana.
Oh, Very much so. I will not return to West Virginia. I'm sorry, West Virginia, but it's a nice place to visit, but it's scary to live there, especially when you look like I do.
Yeah.
I think I'm kind of cute, but but in general, but when you're someone who, you know, I translated later in life, so it's I'm always going to be obviously trans, and the looks I get when I go back home is kind of weird.
Yeah. I want to talk about your story, and then we'll maybe cover a few other people's, but I want to go back to Diana, because what I love about this book, Diana, by the way, I highly recommend this book. If people want to know what transgender is all about and everything under that umbrella, buy this book. It'll save you the time and trouble of all these scholastic things that I was reading through and everything else. It's well done, but it's also heartfelt. I love how you asked every person you interviewed heartfelt questions so we could get to know who they were. Mm-hmm. And then you got into their journey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was that just who you are and it was part of the process of this, or you felt it was important for the reader?
Well, I think it's important to get to know people. That's the whole point of stories. And so when you ask someone, you know, hey, what's your favorite book, or what's your favorite food, or what do you do in your spare time?
Yes.
You know, then we discover things we have in common.
Yeah.
You know, I love, the color purple also, and mac and cheese, you know, and we build this common foundation of things we have in common.
Yeah.
And I think that's what storytelling does, and it tells us what we have in common. And then asking someone, well, what would you like to share about your personal journey? And then you're getting more intimate about their lives.
Mm. And Addie, music has been a passion for you.
Yeah.
Since early on, correct?
Yeah, my mom told me that I actually started humming and like kicking one foot to a rhythm at about 6 weeks old.
Yeah, I read that. I said, what?
Sometimes I'm not even sure I believe that, but that's what I've been told.
It's a damn good story.
Yeah, it is. But no, I hummed myself to sleep for most of my life.
Yeah.
And then I did a bachelor's and a master's of composition at Ball State.
Yeah.
And then I was working on a doctorate. And that's when I got divorced, and I kind of put my dissertation to the side. When I came back to it, I was like, okay, I'm going to finish this. I'm going to finish my doctorate. And I just looked at the way we treat academia now.
Yeah.
And I was like, we posted one job at Ball State, and there was like 146 applicants. And it was non-tenure track. And I realized working as I work at the Ball State Library right now, and I would actually have to take a pay cut, like a fairly substantial pay cut, to become a professor and like a beginning like adjunct professor. So
yeah.
I switched over and got a second master's in digital storytelling. So I have a little bit more opportunity to move around.
And what is it about music for you?
It makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
I've always, like I said, I've been humming my whole life, and then just started putting that humming down on paper. I can't play the piano anymore because I basically destroyed one wrist in a bicycle accident.
Yeah.
But you know, I've played bass guitar. My major instrument was tuba.
Uh-huh.
So I've been really interested in creating. Basically, music is a sound sculpture in time, and being able to create something that people can experience and have it move them is, you know, I find that to be one of my favorite things. And I still sing. I still, I was trained in opera after I gave up the tuba, because they don't let you keep playing an instrument when you're a composition major, basically.
Yes.
So I've learned all these different ways of producing music, and I still get out there and do it.
Well, you know, when we were doing sound check before we actually started recording, you were singing, and you have an amazing voice, so
Thank you.
Explains it there.
Yeah.
One of the questions Diana asked you was, what are your hobbies or interests? And you said you love to write.
Yeah, I actually write on the Medium for a while. I was doing an advice column called Ask Addie.
Yeah.
I didn't do that for a while. That kind of fell apart. That the publisher of that magazine got ill, and then she put her her efforts into something else. And I occasionally do still print, put essays out on Medium.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Write about, you know, being trans, about how to spot people who are not going to be healthy for you, that kind of thing.
As best as you can you share your journey with my listeners? You say in the book that you knew early in your life there was something different about you.
Yeah, I did. I was always the weird kid. Mm. You know, it's like I preferred hanging out with the girls, but the girls didn't want me because I was a boy, and men made no sense. Like, boys and men made no sense to me. I had no idea how to relate to them. I tried, and I was bad at it. So that's what got me called the weird kid.
Yeah.
Still to this day, men start being all masculine around me. And I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea how to relate to you people. I really don't. It's just men in general. And actually for very, very feminine women, I don't relate to them very well either.
Yeah.
You're
talking about men being men. I have to chuckle because I've had several female friends on Match.com, and guys are actually stupid enough that one of their photos posted on there is they take their shirt off and hold a fish.
Yeah,
like
I don't
that's
know
some
what,
masculine
I don't
woodsy.
Know what that is. Makes no
or,
sense.
Or
to
here
me.
I am in my pickup truck.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't even identify with that. So I understand.
Yeah. Well, but it just goes to a deeper level with me. And it's like I couldn't find, like, I knew men I liked. There were men that I can hang out with and boys of my own age when I was growing up. And they were never the jocks. They were never the student leaders or anything like that. They were the weirdos, the outcasts, the people who would accept me for who I am instead of wanting me to be something much more masculine and something that I wasn't.
Yeah.
And as I grew up, my ex-wife is a clinical psychologist.
Interesting.
Yeah. and I ended up taking every single personality test that you can think of as her guinea pig. And one of them ended up calling me a feminized male. And then gave me advice on how to be more masculine. Because that's where our culture was.
Right,
was that
right.
Men have to be manly and I wasn't. Mm-hmm. So even like this, the test results were telling me, no, you can't be like that. You have to be something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what happened around age 43 when you had a revelation?
I had been dating a woman, and we broke up because she realized she was, like, pretty much strictly gay. She thought she was bi. We gave it a shot. Mm-hmm. She's gay. Mm-hmm. We stayed really close friends for a long time.
Okay.
And she started dating somebody who identified as genderqueer. And I related this earlier. So I was like, what is this? Put it in a search engine, and there was a whole website about being genderqueer. Mm-hmm. So I started reading it, and then I read the next dot website and the next one, and I just slowly came to the realization that these people were talking about me. Mm. And I had a really tough time with that, actually, trying to come to terms with what that means. And then, you know, it went pretty quickly, but it was like it was almost traumatic for me to realize, oh, this is what's been going on with me for the last 40-some years. Mm-hmm. And eventually I came to terms with it, and I came out as genderqueer. Mm-hmm. I still used he, him pronouns for a while, but even that started to not feel right as I developed into that identity, started to embrace it. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, about 2015, late 2015, I was 45 or so, and I had a really bad time. I was not myself for quite some time because I was starting to come to the realization that that the body I was in was making me unhappy. Mm-hmm. I had been having sexual issues for years. Mm-hmm. And I realized it was because I did not like doing that as a man. Mm. It was kind of traumatic for me.
Yeah.
And
It was traumatic for you. Did you have people to talk to about that?
Well, my ex-wife. And
psychologist.
Then,
okay.
Psychologist. Okay. Yeah. And she... It was before I had figured myself out. Mm-hmm. So she was telling me all these other things it could be. And it's like, it doesn't feel right. And I don't think that's what the problem was. And then it went on from, psychologists and other psychologists and girlfriends and girlfriends. I've had one since I got divorced. Mm-hmm. but friends who are girls, let's put it that way.
Sure.
And eventually it just got to the point where I had to admit that I was not happy with a male body. Mm. And that was actually the source of a lot of the issues I was having. So I started transitioning at the beginning of 2016, and I recently found a picture from that time.
Yeah.
And it is amazing how much I have changed over the last 4 years. Uh-huh. And how much happier I am now, and how much less of a jerk I am, because I was a real jerk during the time when I was trying to figure things out. I became quite combative and just not in a good place, and transitioning has fixed that for me, honestly.
Yes. Yeah. Diana, you introduced me to a term, allies, being an ally to transgenders, those of us who are not. Can you share a little bit about that, what that means?
Well, I spoke to parents who are advocates and allies for their children who are transgender and non-binary, and they talked about things that people in the community can do that would be helpful for the families and helpful for the individuals as well. So, you know, one thing is gender neutral restrooms for everyone. You know, just make that obstacle not be there for individuals. So that was one thing.
Which
that
is
came
still
up.
Rare, tragically. I have seen it in some places.
Phoenix Theater.
Phoenix Theater, right?
Amazing,
exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I talked to Kit Malone, who's at the Indiana American Civil Liberties Union, and she's also on the board of Trinity Haven, and she gave me some insights and input for the book so that allies can have sort of some practical action steps that they can take. So what Kit had recommended was show up, you know, attend the LGBTQ events in your area so that you get to know people in the community who are transgender or non-binary or gender non-conforming. Attend a Transgender Day of Remembrance happening in your area. That is very powerful. That's usually in November. And when you are seeing pictures of people and you see their ages and you see where they're from and you see, you know, oh, that person is from Ohio, age 17, and has been murdered. The next person on the screen is age 19 from Bloomington and has been murdered, and the next person on the screen is 23. It's very emotional and informative of what's happening in our local communities and what's happening in the world. So, and she had some other suggestions. Speak up, you know, don't let cruel language and hate speak go unchecked. You know, if you see it in social media, you see it in your family, you see it with politicians, you know, say something.
Well, let me ask you, one of the people you interviewed, not everybody was willing to give their names or their complete names, but one individual did, and that's Becky Troyer, and she's a mom. What did you learn from her about what it is to be a mom to someone who's transgender?
Becky's child is non-binary.
Okay.
Becky mentioned that, you know, your children come through you and they're just your kid and you have to love them, and that it's your job to love your child and to just be their support and be their advocate and to just love them and to advocate in the schools and advocate in your communities to make sure that they get what they need.
And Becky's part of a group I didn't know about. I've been to Gay Pride 3 times, marched in it once. It's coming up, by the way. And you're on the board of Gay Pride.
Yeah.
Is that right? Here in Indianapolis?
Yeah, Indy Pride.
Okay.
Yes, I'm the director of education at Indy Pride.
And what are the dates for that coming up?
The parade and festival is on June 13th, okay. But we actually start the week before on June 6th with Trans Glam and Pet Pride.
Okay.
We have a community picnic on the Sunday on the 7th, and then throughout that whole week, there's every day of the week except Friday is a different event. We do about 17 events during the week.
Yeah. Diana, one of the things Becky shared, one of the questions you asked her and her answer really touched my heart when she talked about being there at the Pride Parade. And as an ally, I suppose, she was part of a group called Free Mom Hugs. And I guess there's free dad hugs where people are just giving away hugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in the community, a lot of us don't have contact with our parents because we've been disowned.
Yeah.
That's one of the realities of being in the LGBTQ community is, you know, we receive hate from our parents sometimes. My mom has been fine, well, maybe not fine with me, but she tries.
Yeah.
And I still know that she loves me. There are people, though, who have been told that you're not my child, never come back. And so free mom hugs, free dad hugs, they are there to step in and, you know, be there for people.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite organizations.
Yeah. Diana, concerning the kids you interviewed, how many kids did you interview for this book?
I think it was about, I don't remember, five, six, something, seven.
Was there a particular story about from any one of them that struck your heart maybe at that time?
I would say every person in the book I talked to struck my heart, and all their stories inspire me and motivate me to do more, and I learn so much from everyone. I can just give you a couple quick examples.
Yeah, please.
Andy mentioned at school, so this is just last year, you know, being in the hallway, and so at that time, this is outside Indianapolis, standing in the hallway, and someone coming up to him and shoving him in his chest. Right, and so he still at that time has a female chest, which is very sensitive, and vulnerable, and being shoved into the woman's restroom, you know, called a or something. So you know that just happened this past year. So our school systems need to be aware that this bullying and physical assault is happening, you know, and the parents need to be aware, and the teachers need to be aware, and the administrators need to be aware that people are being harassed, assaulted, and made to feel less than worthy, which is unacceptable. And then the other story I want to mention, because I think this is an important point for parents to keep in mind, is Vivian, one of the young people I spoke to, mentioned that, I'll just share a little bit of what Vivian said. She said, she said there was a person in high school who was gender queer. I don't know exactly what their gender identity was, but they were some form of gender nonconforming, and that introduced me to the concept. But I would not have come out in high school because that person was terribly bullied. Even associating with that person would have been a problem. But it was definitely on my mind. And then she says she confided in friends, and they said, do not come out, do not do this. This is going to be really bad. Don't even think about it. And she says, so I didn't. And then this is the part I want listeners, maybe who are parents, to take note of. She said, I remember I tested it out with my dad. I made fun of that trans girl with my dad to gauge his reaction, and he also made fun of her. That was the point where I knew I couldn't come out. And someone else had mentioned that, I think Linda mentioned that the same thing, that she knew someone whose child didn't feel safe confiding in them that they were transgender, non-binary. And if we make fun of people or we make jokes about people, you know, we're not giving our children the chance to be who they are.
So. There was a student in there also. I don't remember which one it was now. But it tugged my heart because I thought about, you know, my kids are older now. I want to say they went they were in Kokomo, and then maybe they ended up at North Central. Mm-hmm. But for a while, they had no home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're in high school, junior high, high school, no home to even live.
Living in the parks.
That was,
yeah.
The LGBTQ community makes up less than 10% of the national population. We make up about 40% of the homeless population because we are kicked out of our homes at a very young age.
Mm.
That brings up
another issue about homelessness and homeless shelters. How are they treating transgender?
Is that
an issue?
Oh, that's a huge issue.
Yeah.
Transgender people often are allowed in,
mm-hmm.
especially on the faith-based missions that run shelters. You have to hide who you are mm-hmm. in order to find shelter.
Yeah.
And if they find out who you are, they kick you out. Mm-hmm. There was one that let a trans woman freeze to death on the street because mm-hmm. they wouldn't let her into the shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And this is reality for us. I'm counting myself lucky, honestly, that I figured myself out later in life because I already had a good job and some place to live.
Yeah. Well, that's what I love about this book, Diana. And again, thank you for writing this, because this is a reality for so many of these people or their families. But for so many others, we're oblivious to this
mm-hmm.
because, you know, you don't really hear a lot about it in the news. And the news is always talking about the next crisis that's out there. And yet you're talking about thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of people across this country alone that are dealing with this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, do both of you see positives beginning to happen, though? Is it turning the right direction?
I believe so. I mean, I also work with Gender Nexus. And there we're trying to help the transgender and non-binary community to access services.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the hospitals in this city, they are helping with, you know, like I go to Eskenazi, IU, Riley has a gender clinic for children.
Okay.
And Gender Nexus helps with that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of resources becoming available.
Mm-hmm.
Now that Indianapolis is kind of a rarity in this state, being the largest city and having the, you know, it's kind of an island in a lot of, you know, in a lot of places,
mm-hmm.
In a sea of rejection, basically.
Yeah.
So people in smaller towns, they often end up moving to mm-hmm. Indianapolis.
Are you aware of how, I mean, Bloomington always strikes me as a progressive town.
Yes.
Are they more hip, do you think, for things like this, as far as you know?
They, the HRC, Human Rights Campaign, puts out a rating of cities.
Mm-hmm.
And Bloomington has the highest rating in the state. They're actually quite LGBTQ friendly.
And what are your hopes and dreams for the transgender community?
That people will start to understand that we're not mentally ill, that we're not possessed by demons, that we're just people
mm-hmm.
Who, you know, we just want to work. We just want to have friends and family and just let people be who they are instead of trying to force them into being what you think they should be.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things. And can I take a second just to do an aside?
Sure.
Earlier, you said something. You said the transgenders, which is kind of a problematic language.
Okay.
Because when you say the transgenders,
mm-hmm.
you're making it the other. You're mm-hmm. making it a separate group. I'm mm-hmm. a transgender person.
Mm-hmm.
And there's way more to me about them being a transgender person.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. when, you know, that's the language that a lot of people use to try to other us and try to say, well, the transgenders are going to, mm-hmm. you know, I can go into my Rush Limbaugh voice, but I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just one of those things that when we're talking about using gender neutral language and using queer friendly language, that's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the transgenders
mm-hmm.
or, when you make it a noun or when you make it plural, even transgenders, you're saying that's a separate group. We're not a separate group. We're just like everybody else.
Well, I suppose, thank you for correcting me on that. And I suppose because I was home long enough to watch some of the news, which is always a mixed blessing, and all the changes going on in politics. And there was a lot of talk about the black community, the black voters, the same.
Exactly. And it separates black people from white people, and that's one of the things we need to change our language to start to bring people together.
So I'm guessing we probably, and correct me if I'm wrong, Diana or Addie, I'm thinking about our public schools across the country, but even here in Indianapolis, I can't imagine there's been a lot of training on this to the teachers. Would that be an accurate statement? I mean, there's a long way to go in our public schools, whether it be elementary or high school or what have you.
No, there's not a lot of training. I freelance, do sensitivity and diversity trainings. I'm actually doing one here on the University of Indianapolis campus on the 30th of this month.
Oh, wonderful.
I'll be at the Student Center.
Okay.
I did one last summer, for Hamilton County, and I think I had about seven people in the training. Because it was a voluntary thing. It wasn't like a countywide kind of training.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, you don't hear you Gender Nexus, Julie Walsh, who is the executive director of Gender Nexus, she goes into the school system sometimes and she does some trainings. Mm-hmm. But we have to be invited in, and we're not often invited in. Mm-hmm. And that's where you get people who are like, there was a teacher recently, I think it was just last year, maybe a year before, who was refusing to use a trans kid's proper name and pronouns, because it was against his freedom of speech. It didn't matter that he was doing damage to the child, as far as he was concerned.
Yeah,
he thought he had the right to damage his child because that's what he believed.
Yeah,
and I think if we had more training to let them know, you know, that kind of thing actually increases the likelihood that child will commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
If they know these things, maybe it will help them to move beyond these ways of dividing us out and making the schools safer for trans kids.
Yeah. And Diana, first of all, you helped so many people share their voice to countless readers now through this book. So thank you for that gift. What are your thoughts? What are your hopes and dreams for, first of all, what would you like your book to accomplish?
Well, I think it would be good to have the book in the schools, have the teachers read the books, have, students read the books so they understand about the bullying and mm-hmm. what the consequences of that are for individuals, and have the doctors read the book, and have social workers and counselors so that we do get more informed and we mm-hmm. understand better how to do better.
Mm-hmm. And how can that happen, by the way? How can we get these books into the schools and into the doctor's offices?
Okay, thank you for asking.
And we could have a listener who is in a power position.
That's right. Well, first, you can order the book off my website. Mm-hmm. It's dianaensign.com. It's also on Amazon and Kindle. And I'm also setting up a GoFundMe site so that I could give away the books to, especially rural areas and nonprofits that maybe don't have the funds to buy them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And how will we know when that is up and running?
It's there. I just haven't put it out to the world. But if you go to GoFundMe, Diana Ensign, you will see it says the Freedom to Be free book launch. And none of that money goes to me. It would just go to getting the books into rural areas and places where I think it would be helpful, because the book does have a glossary of terms, and it has suggestions, and it has the practical action steps for allies, and it has the stories from the heart that I think could reach people.
I would think so, too, and that's what I love about the book, too. It's very practical, and because of the resources and the terms and definitions and such, that's also very helpful, and every library needs to have this. And gosh, I don't know how many libraries we have in Indiana, but that would be a lot, too.
I think that would be nice, because then you could go in and you don't have to worry about, you know, if you're a parent and, you know, you can just go to the library and check it out and read it and get more information.
And as an ally, what would you like to share with other allies who are listening right now?
That there's a lot we can do. Listening is the first place to start, at least in my opinion. If you listen to people and you ask them, what do you need? And then they tell you what they need, then the next step is to then do it. So if they're saying, you know, we want you to use the correct pronouns, we want you to use the correct names, we want you to educate yourself, we want you to attend events, then that is on us to do that. to make that effort.
Yeah. Diane, I want to thank you for being here. I want to thank you for the gift of another great book. Mm-hmm. Again, share your web address.
It's just my name, Diana, D-I-A-N-A, and then my last name, E-N-S-I-G-N. So okay. DianaEnsign.com.
And Addison J. Smith, how much longer will you be up in Muncie? I hear you'd like to come down to Indianapolis.
As soon as I can find a job that pays more than what the library is paying me, which is not very difficult, I will move down here. But yeah, I've spent a lot of time in Indianapolis doing a lot of activist work. And I would love to make my drives much shorter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if anybody out there is in a position to offer you that job.
They can get through to me through my website.
Please share your website.
It's Addison's Agenda. A-D-D-I-S-O-N.
Yeah, I love
Agenda.
That.
Yeah, it's .com. Uh-huh. It's basically, we people keep talking about the you know, my Rush voice again, you know, the LGBTQ agenda. It's like, my agenda is, you know, I want to go to the bathroom without someone bothering me.
I know. My, have we got to raise the vibration of love more and more in our communities. By the way, Diane, I believe you have a book signing coming up. Can you share information about that, please?
Sure. I have a book launch. It's March 21st, Saturday at 2 p.m. It will be at the Tube Factory Art Space off of Garfield Park. And it's going to be a panel. So on the panel is Andy Lanning, and that's one of the young adults in the book. Mm-hmm. A mother, Diana, who has both a transgender child and also a non-binary child. Sahara Miller from BU Wellness. She has the Sophisticated Divas program that she handles there, and she'll talk about that. And then Kimberly Acoff, who's the IYG Indiana Youth Group Director of Programming, will also be on that panel. And so it will be a great opportunity to hear people talk about their journeys, talk about what allies can do, talk about what we need to do better.
Yeah, and they can talk to you about your book as well.
And they can get copies of my book as well.
Yes. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Diana and Addison, thank you so much for sharing your time. Thank you so much for being here in the studio with us. It's been a joy.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. In closing, I'd like to share a few things on how to be an outspoken ally in larger groups at work or at school. First of all, speak out in support of transgender people and transgender rights. Politically correct others if they use the wrong name or pronoun for a transgender person. More broadly, it's important to challenge anti-transgender remarks, jokes, and conversations. Call them on it. It can be scary to speak out, but loud and visible support for transgender rights can show transgender people that they are accepted, encourage other allies to speak out, and help change the minds of people who aren't supportive of transgender people yet. Support transgender people who experience discrimination. Transgender people may feel that they don't have support from others when making complaints about discrimination or bringing their experiences to authorities, administrators, or others in position of power. Think about how you use gendered language. You talked about that in the interview for a little bit. Do you regularly greet groups by saying ladies and gentlemen? Do you have a coworker who refers to everyone as guys? Is there a particular gender-based joke your friend loves to tell? Tell them not to tell it anymore. Many transgender people are fine being called ladies or gentlemen, but you can't know without asking first. And then learn about policies affecting transgender people. Are there any laws that protect transgender people where you live? Any policies at work or at school that are inclusive of transgender people? It's important to learn more about the challenges that transgender people face and the goals of transgender advocates. And if you're comfortable with it, even help push to change bad laws and policies or support good ones. I can't emphasize enough the importance of this new book that Diana J. Ensign wrote. The book title is The Freedom to Be, Stories from Transgender Youth, Adults, and Their Families. And to find out more information about that, go to her website, Diana Ensign, ENSIGN.com. And that is today's program. I want to thank you for being with me, and please get the word about our programs each week, but particularly this one. I want to thank my engineer, Isaias Jackson, and I want to thank my production coordinator, Angel Richardson, for helping to make this possible. I'm Richard Brendan. You've been listening to Journeys Fire, inspiring the fire within you, one broadcast at a time.